This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Just 3 months, that is how long the congressionally appointed super committee has to come up with a plan to further reduce the deficit. If they don't strike a deal, the Pentagon will be hit with cuts close to $1 trillion. All of this puts the military in a difficult spot. The Pentagon says more defense cuts are unacceptable, but if lawmakers are unable to reach a compromise, the military may have little choice. NPR's Rachel Martin has more.
First, a brief reminder of how we got here. The deficit deal agreed to earlier this month already forced the Pentagon to reduce its budget by $350 billion over the next 10 years. The Pentagon says that will be tough, but they can handle it. What they say they cannot handle is the possibility of $500 billion in more cuts. Those reductions would be triggered automatically if the Congressional Committee fails to do its job. Here's what Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta said yesterday about that scenario during an appearance on CNN.
If they go beyond that, this kind of massive cut across the board, which would literally double the number of cuts that we're confronting, that would have devastating effects. Very simply, it would result in hollowing out the force.
Notice that phrase, hollowing out the force.
It's not neutral. It is something that is pejorative and intended to frighten listeners.
Corey Shockey is a fellow at the Hoover Institution and a professor at West Point. She says hollowing out the force was how the military described the deep defense cuts in the 1970s after the Vietnam War.
When the military was making a number of very important transitions to a volunteer force and doing so at a time of great turmoil and very low spending relative to what had been expected. And so you had cuts in capabilities, and that's where the term hollow force comes from.
Now, Secretary Panetta is reviving the old phrase. Panetta was brought in by President Obama to try to streamline the Pentagon budget, which has more than doubled since 9/11. But now the new Secretary of Defense is drawing the line on how deep those cuts should go.
It would terribly weaken our ability to respond to the threats in the world.
Given all America's commitments around the world, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, not everyone thinks scaling back is such a bad thing.
The country is no longer in a position where it can economically afford to function, in effect, as a global policeman.
Andrew Bacevich is a retired Army colonel and professor of international relations at Boston University. Bacevich argues that the budget cuts will force the U.S. government to do some long-needed soul-searching about the limits of American military power, which missions are worth the cost and which are not. Delivering humanitarian relief to Haiti, helping NATO attack the leader of Libya? What about being able to wage two full-scale ground wars at the same time? Corey Shockey agrees that the budget cuts have to be about more than which weapons systems to cut and which to keep.
You can't just say, well, the F-22 will have to go. You have to say, what kinds of wars will we not fight if we do this?
Shockey, who worked as a campaign advisor for Senator John McCain in 2008, says America needs to keep its military presence around the world strong. If it doesn't, how other countries perceive American power could start to change.
At what point will other countries begin to believe that they can challenge America with impunity? Or the cuts that we are making will impose greater risks on allies that are already in tenuous circumstances, and those allies then make choices that we have a hard time living with.
Secretary Panetta says he can't live with any more cuts to the defense budget beyond $400 billion. But come Thanksgiving, if the super committee fails to come up with a compromise deal, he may not have a choice. Rachel Martin, NPR News, Washington.
The volatility we've seen recently in the stock market is causing many Americans, young and old, to worry about retirement. People are wondering if the money they've saved will last, and they're unsure if they'll ever be able to stop working. NPR's Kathy Lohr visited an Atlanta-area bridge club to talk with people there about their plans and their fears.
More than a dozen card tables are set up at the Rough and Slough Bridge Club in Marietta, Georgia. On this evening, about 20 mostly regulars get ready to play bridge, including Nancy Salazar. She's 76 and still working full time.
I'm a realtor. She says, oh, yeah, we're a little nervous.
Most of Salazar's money is in property, and those values have been declining. The turbulent economy is making everyone anxious, and Salazar says she won't retire anytime soon.
I don't see things getting better for 3 or 4 years. So, no, I think I'll have to keep working for a while.
Another regular here, Richard Holland, has already retired. He was in collections with the IRS. Holland is 67 and has a pension, but he's now looking for a part-time job.
For me, it's not a matter of whether or not I can survive. I can do reasonably well. For me, it's a matter of how long I'm going to be able to survive. Okay?
Holland is married and still paying for his home in an Atlanta suburb. He says he withdraws about $800 a month from his IRA for living expenses. But because the market plummeted, so has the value of his retirement account. And with it, the amount of time his money will last.
I figured it's going to last about 30 years, well, 25 years. Okay, well, now that went from 25 to 30 years to maybe 18 or 19 years. Okay, so after 18 or 19 years, I'm like toast. Unless I can supplement that to live longer.
Holland is tall and lean, and he laughs easily. He likes to make others smile, too. So even with the unemployment rate in Atlanta at around 10%, Holland jokes about the kind of part-time jobs that might be open to him.
Pizza delivery guy. Okay, my skills are limited, all right? I mean, how many people go, oh, you're with the IRS? Oh, good. I've got plenty of jobs for you. No, that doesn't work out that way.
Is it hard? Because, look, there are a lot of young people looking for a job
there
that are just,
are
you know, college graduates.
Who's going to hire me? At my age, it's going to be extremely difficult. I've looked around, but with limited success.
In a recent AARP survey of 5,000 Americans who are 50 or older, 44% say they're likely to work part-time during retirement because of the ailing economy, and one-third say they plan to delay retirement. At another table, Marilyn Brown analyzes a bid that she and her partner didn't quite make.
But I threw one away. That was stupid. I should have just kept throwing my clubs.
Brown is fed up with the U.S. economy.
I'm 66 years old. I've lived in this country all my life, and I'm moving to Costa Rica 5 weeks from tomorrow.
Really?
Mostly to go where my money will go somewhere. My Social Security check will pay more than my living expenses. And if I stay here, I'm just going to be a bag lady.
Brown says she lost her job in the cable industry in 2007, and it took her 3 years to find a new one at a local company where she's been making much less. She bought property in southern Costa Rica with a friend, and they're moving because she says she can't afford to stay in her home here.
But really and truly, who wants to work the rest of their life? I mean, I've worked hard all my life, and I lost a ton of money in 2000 and 2001, dot-com and 9/11. So I should have had a really nice retirement, and I will now that we found someplace else to go.
Brown has two sons and a granddaughter, and she says she'll miss them. But at the same time, she can visit, and they won't have to worry about supporting her. Kathy Lohr, NPR News, Atlanta.
A meeting in Paris between the leaders of France and Germany yesterday was intended to ease concerns about the European debt crisis. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Nicolas Sarkozy announced several plans, but that did not satisfy skittish markets. They were looking for a quicker fix. NPR's Jackie Northam reports from Paris.
Analysts say the proposals laid out by Chancellor Merkel and President Sarkozy to harness the European debt crisis are sound enough, but they're long-term plans, while markets are looking for more immediate solutions. The two leaders called for a tighter economic and political union among the 17 nations that make up the Eurozone, and they want all member nations to adopt what they call a golden rule, to commit to balance their budgets and work on budget deficits, something lacking among troubled countries such as Greece. But the leaders chose not to commit to issuing eurobonds, which would distribute responsibility for the debt across the eurozone. Merkel, in particular, is opposed to the collective bonds because it would place too much burden on Germany. But, like Sarkozy, she did not rule them out in the future. Her meeting with Sarkozy came shortly after news that Germany's economy had ground to a near standstill in the last quarter, far below predicted growth. Merkel said there was no magic wand that would resolve the debt crisis, that it will be a step-by-step process, one which she and Sarkozy signed off on, but which may not go far enough to calm the markets. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Paris.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Despite the waves of economic trouble, U.S. companies are earning enormous amounts of money these days, and they're keeping much of it in cash. For example, at the end of last year, Google had nearly $35 billion in cash on its balance sheet. All that money was one of the reasons Google was able to buy Motorola Mobility this week. But as NPR's Jim Zaroli reports, many companies are being especially cautious with their cash.
The U.S. economy may be slowing to a crawl, but a lot of individual companies are richer than ever. Rick Lane is a senior vice president at Moody's.
Companies are generating and maintaining more cash than they have aggregate uses for.
Moody's recently put out a report about the 1,600-plus U.S.-based companies it rates. It said they had $1.2 trillion in cash at the end of 2010, which was 11.2% more than they had the year before. Companies that have a lot of cash can use some of it to invest and hire. That's what Caterpillar is doing, says spokesman Jim Dugan.
In 2011, our plan for CapEx is $3 billion, which would be an all-time record for us, about $1.5 billion in the United States. And the focus on cash for Caterpillar is growth.
But a lot of other companies right now are sitting on their cash, using it sparingly, if at all. Apple, Cisco, and Microsoft had each amassed $40 billion or more in cash by the end of last year. Rick Lane of Moody's notes that many companies were unable to get credit during the last financial crisis, and they're trying to be more prudent about how they spend money now.
So I think one of the reasons that's contributing to many companies holding on to cash would be the very vivid memories of the severity of the downturn that commenced in mid-2008.
And companies can borrow money very cheaply right now, so instead of paying off their debts, they can sit on cash as long as possible. But there's a more basic reason companies are hoarding money. The U.S. economy simply isn't growing enough. The labor market is weak, says Charles Biederman of the investment research firm TrimTabs.
So without growing income, where's the money to buy more stuff? Absent a change in demand, the fact that companies have all this cash, well, good for them. Not going to help us.
And with the economy limping along, companies are more reluctant to invest and hire in the United States.
The bottom line is a large number of very successful U.S. companies are on a wait-and-see mode, with the U.S. economy in particular.
Anant Sundaram, who teaches at Dartmouth's Tuck School of Business, says during recessions, companies usually try to rebuild their balance sheets. They lay people off, they pay off debts, and they emerge healthier and ready to invest their money again. Not this time.
That is something we are not seeing a great deal of, and that is leading to the cash increase.
And this means companies are also not hiring, at least in the United States. Moody's Rick Lane says a lot of American companies make more and more of their profits in fast-growing countries like China, Brazil, and India.
What we're finding is that a higher percentage and dollar amount of cash among many parts of the corporate universe is being generated and maintained overseas.
And U.S. companies that earn profits abroad have to pay taxes when they bring it home, so they tend to like to keep money overseas as long as possible. Business leaders in the United States regularly complain that this discourages domestic investment. But even if tax laws were changed, the boom in foreign markets means companies have an incentive to keep money abroad. And when they get ready to spend the cash they're holding on to, that's where a lot of it will go. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.